Welcome to the MMA Roadshow episode number 22. This week we are coming to you from Temecula, California, the beautiful and I say somewhat surprising Pechanga Resort and Casino here in Temecula, California. John Morgan, cold coffee here in what is the actual first ever road trip of the MMA Roadshow. We actually jumped in a car today and left Las Vegas and made it to Temecula, California. And little did I know, your first ever time after 4 years of living in Vegas of making the drive from Las Vegas to SoCal.
It was kind of nice, you know. Actually drove past Prim, drove through State Line that I've been hearing about, you know. It was kind of neat to actually go through there, and then right outside of that, it was like, welcome to California. I was like, holy shit, here it is. The very first time I've actually driven on the road, you know, and the first time here we are actually taking the road to get to a show. So it's the road show, you know, actually living by our name. And no, it's been good so far. I mean, this is a nice casino, a lot nicer than I thought it would be. You know, you go on some not off-brand shows, if you will. You know, you never know what you're going to expect. But this place is nice, man, fancy. And we just had a great dinner here. And
yep.
You know, thank you, Junkie. Thank you, USA Today, for that delicious dinner. I'm having a great time. I'm looking forward to it. Been a long day today because of the drive, getting up extra early. But, yep. It's been good so far.
Yeah.
Enjoying it.
It has been. Yeah, the drive is not that bad the first time you make it. It gets a little more soul-sucking the more and more that you do it, just because there's not a lot between, obviously, Las Vegas and SoCal. Of course, we're out here for Bellator 141 this weekend. It was not a bad drive. Sometimes it can be terrible. Believe it or not, that drive can take, like, 8 hours if traffic is wrong. If everybody's
that's terrible.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But, as you said, a beautiful property. I will tell people, if you've never been here, to Pechanga, it's worth coming out, man. They have some great restaurants here. It's a beautiful property. We're kind of sitting down here in a little bar. I've got myself the King of Beers, a nice ice cold Budweiser. Cold coffee went with the Stella over there. Let's kind of step in the game up a little bit.
That's right. You know, I'm keeping it international, like, you know.
Nice. Well, it's been a busy week for the road show. We got a lot for you this week, so I want to get right to it. Did want to recap briefly because last week was a little bit special. After we taped the show the next day, it was commentary for the very first time for Mr. Cole Coffee jumping in the commentary booth for Tough Enough. We drove out to Mesquite, Nevada, and called the show there. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, man. I mean, I know you were, I'm guessing, a little bit nervous going into that night. Thought you did a fantastic job working in the booth. But what were your thoughts on doing commentary for the first time? Because it's funny, MMA fans are the first to criticize Joe Rogan or Mike Goldberg or anybody else.
And all those cats, yeah.
But now that you've been on the other side of the microphone at least one time, well, what was your initial impression?
It's definitely not as easy as it seems. It's definitely to kind of keep the conversation flowing, you know. But definitely there were nerves, you know, and at first, you know, trying to be the ever student and, you know, and trying to mimic, you know, people that I respect like Anik and Stan and them. I was like, you know, hey, can I research these guys? Can I do my homework? I want to come prepared. And you're like,
nope.
Well, you know, a lot of the times the card isn't finalized till like the night before. Like there was the one guy that literally took the fight on one day's notice, you know. So just the whole practice of kind of getting there and like, all right, shit, now I can't do my homework. So I have to just like draw from what knowledge or lack of knowledge, you know, in, you know, martial arts and whatnot, you know, just in terms of like the technical terms and all the other stuff, you know. As you do it more, you know, you kind of flow a little bit. But I was even just amazed by, you know, you kept it straight. Like, you know, I saw you take your notes and like, all right, this guy's got this color shorts, this guy's this color, you know.
Sure.
So then, you know, because I'm trying to look at the notes, I'm like, how do I keep it straight, you know? So when I would try to talk about a guy, I'm like, fuck, what was his name again? And so I'd be like, oh, yeah.
You're not watching Chuck Liddell. And,
yeah.
You know.
They're just a bunch of, not nobodies. I don't want to say nobodies, but, you know, just guys that you don't know. So, you know, I'd find myself saying like, oh, yeah, his opponent or his, you know, the guy across the, you know, the cage, you know, little things like that. But, no, it was great. It was a bit nerve-wracking, but by the end it was it was a lot of fun, you know, and I kind of was like, oh, man, I want to do it again, you know.
Yeah.
But it certainly I would have rather had a couple shots maybe beforehand just to kind of loosen up. But, no, it was good. It was a good experience, and I hopefully get the invite to do it again.
I hope we can do it again. I really enjoy doing commentary. I mean, obviously the busy travel schedule makes it a little tough, but I've been calling their shows for a long, long time, and I always really do enjoy doing that job. I think it's a different side of the industry that we don't necessarily get to do all the time. It's a lot of fun. Poor Chris Tione that night. Chris Tione, of course, is a a referee that's been seen in the UFC octagon in Las Vegas, so he's definitely refereed at the highest level. That poor guy had three different fights that night at Mayhem and Mesquite 7 where dudes just had horrible growing shots.
Yeah, went to the buckets.
Oh, yeah. You had guys puking in buckets, and he was the referee every single time for every single one of those.
Unfortunate. It was just almost to a point I think I mentioned it or joking him one time. I was like, dude, if you're going to just bring the bucket with you. To take the bucket hanging off the side or something, you know. Poor guy. I mean, it's unfortunate. But, I mean, I did recognize him. I didn't know what his name, but I definitely recognized him. So that's good. I mean, I think for guys that are going in there doing the amateur fighting and whatnot, and, you know, again, we harped over and over again about how Tough Enough was a good organization, a great stepping stone, you know. So it's good that the guys that they're going to be in there reffing it are legit guys that are the refs that do it at the upper levels, if you will. Yeah. You know, so that's good to see.
Well, they're and they come up that way, which I think is great too. I think people, you know, talk about amateur organizations and it's a great place for fighters to come up, but it's a great place for referees to come up. Chris Tione, Mark Smith, two officials that made their way up through the amateur ranks, did a ton of fights under the Tough Enough banner before they ever made it to the big time pro shows, and I think it's a great proving ground not only for fighters but also for referees, for judges, for all those things. It gets you the practice you need. So Tough Enough really is the best in the business when it comes to amateur fighting. So that was a good time. Hopefully we do get to do the booth again. Hopefully the MMA Roadshow can handle commentary. we didn't travel this past week. That was up to Matt Erickson and Mike Bond, who handled everything up in Saskatchewan. We did watch UFC Fight Night 74. You watched it at home. I actually watched it at my house in my office. I'm assuming just like everybody else, just Max Holloway, Charles Oliveira, just a big letdown for you, just huge disappointment.
It was, you know, I mean, because that was one of those ones where, you know, everything leading into it, you know, it was like, oh, is he going to be able to get Max down? Is Max going to be able to kind of keep it on the feet and keep it separated? And it just all happened so quick that you're just like, ugh. It was just that big, huge, really?
Yeah.
Fuck.
That's what we were waiting on?
All this night built to this, and then it's just that's kind of like when you know that first Fox fight of, like, Junior and Kane, you know, like, the big build-up, and they did everything, and then it was like, oh, it's done in 5 seconds? You're like, oh, okay.
60 minutes of talking and 60 seconds of fighting, as Dana White said.
Now what am I supposed to do? But no, it was big letdown, and you know, whether they run it back or not, you know, I'm a big fan of both of them, so I'm definitely looking forward to seeing them fight again, whether it's together or just fighting again. Yeah. I love seeing Max.
Well, I mean, I think 23 fight. Years old and 25 years old, incredible. Yeah. So obviously, we're not a big recap kind of show, and it's been a week since then, but just always like to share little things that I think about when I'm watching. And one of the coolest stories that came out of the whole week for me, honestly, was Francisco Trinaldo, Master Anduba.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Who had the amazing post-fight speech afterwards. You know, his birthday.
That was moving. That moved me.
It really was. It was moving. And then, you know, he celebrated his birthday the next day. If you haven't seen it, his 37th birthday was the day after the fights. And he said, listen, you know, I never had enough money to celebrate a birthday. And so I want my mom to throw a party for all the kids in Brazil because I can afford to have it now. And what was awesome was it happened, and there was a story, and I think originally it was reported in Brazil, but UFC.com, actually, Davi Correa, who works with the Brazilian team down there, helped put together a story, and they put it in English on UFC.com that, you know, his mom did throw the party, and 100 kids.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, 100 kids.
100 kids from his hometown got to celebrate.
And that's making – I mean, that's what I love about this sport. When people – and I love about a lot of the fighters that are involved, you know. I mean, they're giving back to their communities. I mean, without MMA, without the UFC, without some of these things, I mean, you're literally seeing guys' lives change and then being able to then remember where they came from, turn right back around, and then give it back. They're humble about it, you know. I mean, sure, there's guys go out and they're getting the fancy car. They'll get the whatever. I mean, granted, who's going to stop them? You deserve it. You worked your ass off to get to where you are. Good for you. But then also, you know, the guys to give it back and then to hear that story. I mean, when he said that speech, man, I got choked up.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that guy, you know, over the years, you know, never really thought of him because, you know, oh, there's, of course, the language barrier. So it's like, you know, can't make conversation. But, I mean, I immediately became a huge fan of him after that speech and just I was moved by it. And then to hear that it actually happened, it's one thing to say, yeah, do it. You know, I want you to go do this. And then let alone to know that it actually happened. And I can only imagine the kids, you know, because from hearing what I heard from talking about his life or whatever, to see that those kids got to have something. That was finally, I mean, we've seen some really shitty, crazy areas in Brazil. So to see somebody being able, I can only imagine how much that meant for the kids that were actually able. That might have been the first party that some of those kids have ever went to. I mean, it's amazing. It's huge.
This is a story, and I've never asked Francisco if this is the truth, just because it's kind of hard to approach, to be honest with you. But just to put in perspective where he came from, and this is what I told him. If you go back and look through the records, and you know, Kenny, since you do video editing and those sort of things, it might have been wiped from the records now. But when he first came to the UFC, his name was Francisco Drenaldo with a D.
Oh, okay.
He was coming off the Ultimate Fighter. And of course, I've been going down to Brazil for every show since August 2011, and I noticed that the next time we came down there, he was Francisco Trinaldo with a T, and I'm like, why did his name change? What the heck is going on? And so I spoke with some USC officials at the time, and basically what they said was, listen, don't know how to say this. The truth is, he didn't really know how to spell his name. He didn't know how to write his name. He had no idea. I mean, that's where he came from, to not even know, you know, the sound of your name and what it's supposed to sound like. You don't necessarily know how to write it.
Right.
And that's where he came from.
Wow.
That's how, you know, low of an area he came from and how ridiculous what he had to fight through. So to be able to then turn around and give 100 kids in your neighborhood a party because of, you know, the blood, sweat, and tears that you've put into a sport, man, I think it's amazing. So I thought the speech itself was amazing. Knowing a little bit of his backstory was incredible. And then seeing that they did follow through on it, man, there's so many things you could talk about this card at UFC Fight Night 74 of winners and losers and all these things, but that one's going to stick with me.
That was special. That was special.
Yeah. So, all right, this is the MMA Roadshow. As we said, we are in Temecula, California right now. If you're listening, please do us a favor. Follow us on the MMA Roadshow, Twitter, Instagram. You can follow along with our adventures as we're going through in the road, and then, of course, listen as we post things up every Friday. If you're downloading us on iTunes, please subscribe to us, rate us, review us, do all those things to help us continue to blow this thing up and to grow it, because we're having a lot of fun doing it. So
that before we move on, I want to make sure that, you know, because I know the diehards that are listening, because you just made me pop in my head about here we are on the road. I definitely want to give a shout out before I forget to do it. We've been trying to implement more and more the technology and all the other stuff. So big thank you to the people that we actually have a Periscope account, which is just like everything else, we branded the MMA Roadshow, TheMMARoadshow. And pretty much, I'm not sure how it's all tied into Twitter, if it just suggested it, so it makes it easy to find it. If you already follow us on Twitter, maybe it just pops up automatically. But I recognize a lot of the same names of the people, you know, that follow it. But big kudos to the people that did follow us. You know, we've been trying to implement it. So earlier today when we did some of the stuff that's going to come out in the show, we tried to implement it, you know, and kudos to those that actually logged on and did it. And please, those of you who are into Periscope and the other kind of stuff, follow us on that as well, and hopefully we'll implement it more. I mean, unfortunately, there's always technical difficulties, like my phone
kept overheating,
and it kept shutting down right in the moments where, of course, the conversation was getting great, you know. But, you know, it is what it is, you know, but we definitely thank everybody for, you know, following us on the different things. So that's another one to add to the list of ones to do, and we'll try to remember to kind of pump it out, and hopefully we'll just remember to actually do it. And maybe one of these, like I kept saying, you know, hey, we'll do it for one of these tapings, but, you know, I got to figure out a way to keep the phone cool or something.
Yeah.
Because it shutting down right in the middle is not a good option. That's not a good look, Periscope.
Well,
I don't know if that's a phone thing. I don't know if it's it's an LG G4 thing that I have. I mean, but typically, I mean, all that stuff running, the screen, the camera, the whatever, they got to figure out a way.
Maybe just buy an iPhone.
Ah, man, but then it'd just be like, I don't know.
You anti-Apple.
You know, hey, no, I mean, I would not be opposed if you would say today, and, you know, helped check in so I get a nice brand new Mac, because all this nice 4K footage that I've been working, you know, it's killing my PC.
Well, yes, as you said, we're trying to play around with Periscope a little bit. We're just trying to do whatever we can, man. We'd like to bring the road to you guys, you to the road, however you want to look at it. I mean, obviously, we get a chance to travel around a lot and cover this fine sport that we love so much. So anything we can do to get people a little bit closer to it, that's what we're going to do. And, well, you mentioned it. We tried Periscope today as we were talking with Scott Coker. I want to get to that next. Had a chance to sit down with Scott for, you know, almost half an hour right before the weigh-ins and just after we'd gotten to town. And I thought it would end up being a lot of fun talking to Scott Coker. Just probably the most free-speaking Scott Coker that I can remember in a long time. I think he finally feels really comfortable and in control of his position at Bellator. He did slip up once and start to call it Strike Force, which was pretty funny. But you can't blame him. The guy was Strike Force for years and years and years. Oh, yeah, but
sure. And I'm sure he sat in that same chair talking to you about Strike Force. So it's, you know, that's muscle memory, you know. Can't blame him, but he recovered. He recovered quickly, you know, and you know, don't think anything less about it.
No, exactly. And again, it's funny because, you know, once he sold Strikeforce, I mean, even when it was Strikeforce, like, he had business partners. It wasn't like he was just running the thing by himself and could shoot off at the hip and just say whatever he wanted to do. You know, he had to talk to other people. And then, of course, once it got to the UFC, especially at the UFC, he'll be the first to admit he was a figurehead. I mean, he was kept on as part of the purchase. Didn't really, you know, it was kind of a ceremonial type position more than anything else. And, you know, when you interviewed him and asked him questions, there wasn't a whole lot he could say as far as, you know, if it was a matchmaking thing, it was, well, you know, I'll get with Sean Shelby on that and we'll get back to you. If it was, well, are you going to go to this venue or when are you going to go to that? I mean, he wasn't in charge of making those decisions. So the questions you get, you know, the answers was always like, well, we'll check with so-and-so, we'll get back with you in a couple of weeks, or I'm expecting an announcement on that soon, or always enjoyed the guy, speaking with the guy, but it got to the point where there just wasn't a whole lot to be gained from doing interviews. And today, it's obvious that has completely changed. He is very much in control of what he's doing at Bellator. He points out some very positive numbers, and really he broke a lot of news with us as well, which was a lot of fun to watch. So
yeah, that was great.
Yeah, he had a lot of good things to say. So hopefully you guys will enjoy it, because it was honestly the most fun conversation I've had in a while. With Scott Coker, to be honest with you. So as I'm overlooking the casino here, I got briefly distracted there. A host of mixed martial arts officials and important people in the industry were just walking by and saying hello and saying what's up. So kind of cool. It's kind of like the old school days here. It's not the UFC where people are really just, you know, nobody can have any privacy in any room. I mean, people can kind of walk around, hang out, and kind of low profile for the most part.
I don't know if we just mentioned what we just saw as we were walking back from the other bar. I mean, is that something we keep?
let's just say.
Maybe can we call him Fighter X?
Fighter X would be good. Fighter X would be good. Let's just say, as we walked over here from dinner to grab our spots here, we did see a prominent Bellator fighter who will be fighting on the card tomorrow night shooting some craps.
Yeah, shooting craps, you know. I thought maybe hydration would be a better thing to do this evening, but
you know,
if
this particular person wins, then
we'll think like, oh, that's the way to do it.
If they lose, then we'll definitely call them out and put them on blast.
Yeah,
or her on blast,
or her.
But it wasn't her.
Yeah.
All right, enough of that. I'm getting low on Budweiser here, so I need to go get another round of frosty adult beverages. So in the meantime, while we do that, listen to Scott Coker. Like I said, I think it was one of the most entertaining interviews and conversations, I guess, that I've had with him in a long time, and hopefully you guys will all enjoy it as well. And pay attention, because there's a lot of breaking news on this. He drops little news and nuggets and notes from start to finish. So hopefully you enjoy listening to Scott Coker. Well, Mr. Scott Coker, always a pleasure to see you, sir. It's been a little while, so it's good to see you again, and thank you for having us out. This is a fantastic facility, and I enjoyed the fight last time we were here, and I'm looking forward to this weekend as well.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
For sure. Just want to start out first and just get the general overview. Obviously, it's been a little bit more than a year with you in charge here. I know that when you first come into a new organization, mm-hmm. you've got to kind of learn the ropes, learn the roles, learn everybody there. After a year, I think at that point you mm-hmm. should be making an impact. Where do you feel like the organization is at right now versus where you expected it to be or wanted it to be when you came on board?
I mean, I think we're way ahead of schedule. I mean, when I came in and started, you know, revamping the company and the format, people have to remember we were in there for a month and we had to start doing a fight. We did our first fight here after a month, and then we went on the road for 10 weeks. And then we did the Tito Ortiz fight with Bonner. So we were busy moving offices, changing staff, changing formats, and doing all that, fixing all these landmines that are popping up everywhere, and just fixing stuff, right? And so we were, that was the first 6 months of our existence. And then the last 6 months, 7 months have really been us kind of hitting our stride now. And so I feel pretty good about it. And, you know, if you look at our ratings are up 34% from last year. Our paid attendance is up 76% from last year. And it'll be even more after Dynamite in San Jose. So because we're gonna just rock the house up there in at the SAP Center. So, you know, to me, it's like the report card. We're way ahead of schedule. I give myself an A-. You know, maybe an A. I don't know. We'll see. You know, we'll have to say, what does Kevin K give me? That's really what the report card should look like. But I think that we're doing a good job. And, you know, we had a very good roster to start with. Started shaving off some of it, adding on. You know, and now we have a solid roster in the center. We have some new guys like the Ed Roos, the Aaron Picos, just the future of this company, and some development guys that we're going to cultivate. Sprinkle that on top with the Kimbo Slices of the world, the Ken Shamrocks, and all the fun fights that we've done. I mean, I think it's a pretty robust roster.
Obviously, you came on board with a lot of experience. You were very successful with Strikeforce. Mm-hmm. When you came on board, what was it? Was it, hey guys, I got this. Let me show you how we do things in this business because, you know, I've got the experience. You know, let me do Strikeforce again.
Right.
Or was it, okay, I've got to learn some things from you too, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, let's incorporate that. How did it work?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, I've learned a few things over 30 years in this fight business and felt confident about where we're going to go. But on the other hand, it was really about learning how does the Spike TV machine work. How does the Viacom machine interact with the Spike TV, you know, operation? How do we interact with those two, you know, like one of the biggest media conglomerates in the world, plus Spike TV and then Bellator? How do we interact together? And really that was the part that, you know, I mean, when I first came in, I didn't even know anybody's name. You know, can anybody put on name tags here? Because I have no idea who anybody is. But I knew one guy in the company. You know, walking in and said, what do all you guys do? Like, explain to me what you guys do. But, you know, once we figure out who our core staff is going to be and how it all worked with Spike and how it worked with Viacom and just the backing and the support that you get from Spike TV and all their media assets and Viacom and all their assets. I mean, it's just been a great experience to see something like this really getting behind MMA, because when we were with Strikeforce, we had a great support system from Showtime, but you know, they were in 20 million homes, you know, 25 million homes. Now we're in 100 million homes, and you know, it's been a good experience. I'm glad I did it, and it's been very unique from any other situation that I've ever had.
Nice. You mentioned the fun fights that you put on from time to time. I hear this term sometimes when matchups come together, fans leave. That's a Scott Coker fight right there. That's a Scott Coker fight. So I just wonder, I mean, when fun fights like that, I mean, do you have what you would consider a matchmaking philosophy, like an angle that you approach things and look at things from that you can verbalize? Or is it just more something from your gut where you go, oh, that sounds fun?
You know what? It really starts with, like, the Kimbo Slice fight, let's say. You know, my son's in that wheelhouse, 18 to 34, right, age. And there was a time where he didn't want to watch MMA anymore. He's like, you know, I'm over it. You know, me and my friends are over it. We don't even watch it. Before I could get him to come over to the house, and we'd hang out and we'd watch the fights. But he was like, we're on to the next thing. So I said to him, hey, what about Kimbo Slice? He goes, oh, I would watch Kimbo Slice. So he's like my marketing survey, him and his friends. Who do you want to see fight? And then you know, we just kind of put our twist on it. But, you know, the Kimbo Ken fight was a fight, you know, it's been kind of regurgitated over and over, but should have happened 8 years ago, and it didn't happen. And what if, you know, the what if situation, and what happened with the cut, and a lot of controversy. So I thought that'd be a fun fight to repaint the picture, so to speak. And that's the one thing of beauty about Spike, is people remember, Spike was the network that gave, you know, the toughest chance. But a lot of those people that worked on that show are still here working today. So there was no learning curve. It wasn't like, well, what is MMA? How do you shoot it? How do you fight it? They already know. So when we come to them with a fun idea like this, they're like, if they're on board, it's a go. And then everybody's behind it. So it's those fun fights are going to continue. It's not going away. And I think that, you know, with the ratings that we've been getting with them, we're definitely going to, you know, keep doing them. And next year's going to be some more interesting fights that I can't tell you about. So
let me ask you, I mean, when your own son is saying that he's starting to turn away from MMA a little bit, was that disheartening for you as somebody that's, you know, so much involved in this industry? Was that difficult for you to stomach a little bit?
You know what? I'll tell you, it wasn't something... I was just surprised because I'm like, well, what do you mean you don't like it? He goes, no, you know, if you do a fight in San Jose, Dad, I'll come check it out. But, you know, they're kind of like on to the next thing, right? And so that's when I said, okay, you know, this philosophy of, you know, when I was working for K1, Mr. Ishii always told me, he said, you know, the core fans are going to be there for you to watch the hardcore fights, but it's the fringe fights and the, you know, the Akebono versus Bob Sapp or that did a 50 share. You know, half of the country watched that show on that New Year's Eve show in Japan. But he goes, you have to have something different than just the hardcore audience. Otherwise, you're just going to get the little circle. But we created a situation where, you know, Tito Ortiz fighting Bonner, I would say the Kimbo Slice fight versus Ken, that it was like the talk of the water cooler. It wasn't just, you know, the hardcore. Some of the hardcore fight fans really didn't like it. You know, we got some heat for that. I get it. But hey, you got to see Pitbull, Waicho, you know, you get to see everything. And so somebody could tune on our fights and see something for everybody. And, you know, for us, if we have the legend fights or the fun fights that we're going to do on the top side of the card, and it attracts a bigger audience and we're casting a bigger net to bring them in and they get to see some of the best fights on the undercard, I think it's a victory for everybody.
I agree with you. You've obviously mentioned the growth that are being made both in the live gate and ratings. Obviously, it looks like Bellator's trending in the right direction. Mm-hmm. The UFC is still the industry leader for right now. Talk about how Bellator operates on a day-to-day basis in relation to the UFC. Is the UFC part of the discussion? Is overtaking the UFC part of the discussion? Is being number one a goal of Bellator? Or is it simply to find a place to be, to coexist, to be profitable, and to be the best Bellator that it can be?
Well, I tell you, it's a good question, but I don't feel that, listen, what we're doing, we don't even look like what a UFC show looks like. We're doing something completely different, and we're going to be number one at what we do. That's it. I don't wake up and worry about what they're doing. They don't wake up and worry about what we're doing. Sometimes, you know, the fighters are going to negotiate, and this thing, so you have that little dance, right? But on a day-to-day basis, it's about me, my staff, how we grow this company, and really stay laser-focused on the growth and to build, to build Bellator. You know, I mean, that's really the goal, right? And, you know, we're doing our part to raise the industry standard. They're doing their part. But let's face it, I mean, compared MMA to hockey, I mean, to even hockey. Hockey sells out three times a week in San Jose. NFL has, you know, 32 sellouts every Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 50,000 people. I mean, MMA is not, you know, baseball, football, basketball. As much as people think it is, it really is not. And so, to me, we have to do our part. And they're definitely doing their part. We're going to definitely do our part. And together, we're going to rise the tide.
Well said. Let's talk about this weekend. Obviously, Bellator 141 here in Temecula. Wanted to ask you about the main event first. Melvin Gillard, fun fighter. I mean, I don't think there's many MMA fans that don't want to watch a Melvin Gillard fight, but comes with a little bit of baggage. He's had some personal struggles. He had issue making weight during his time with World Series of Fighting. What ultimately led you to decide, I'm willing to roll the dice, I want to get into business with Melvin Gillard?
You know, I'll tell you, when we're out there looking for fighters, I want a fighter that has that X factor or has that, you know, that character. To me, he was always a character, right? And when we had the opportunity to sign him, I said, hey, let's go get him. He'll be a lot of fun in our 155-pound weight class. You know, if he gets to the top or the middle, whatever. But I've never seen him really in a boring fight, right? It's like Josh Thompson. Have you ever seen Josh in a boring fight? And so, to me, it's like these guys take a little step back, reshuffle the deck. I'm telling you, it's going to be some action-packed entertainment, you know? And so I thought that, look, we pick this guy up. Let's put him in our rotation. And let's see how far he can go. But I think he realizes too, you know, these opportunities, you know, where else are you going to go from here, right? He knows that this is like one of his stops that he has to really deliver here. And we've had a lot of serious conversations with him. And I'm about giving people chances, you know. And from what I can see so far, he's done everything he said he's going to do. He says he's going to make weight. I have no issue that he'll make weight. I talked to him about 15 minutes ago. He's only a couple pounds heavy. He's cutting weight right now. But I think for the weigh-ins, he'll be fine. And I'm excited to have him on board because, you know, when I think of Melvin, I think of that, the hair, right? Him and Josh Koscheck, they got that gold hair. So, you know, but he's one of the guys that walks down the street and you go, oh, there goes Melvin. You know, there goes this guy. There goes that guy. You know, there goes Kimbo Slice. You know who they are. And he's one of the guys that you know who he is.
no doubt. This weekend's card also features the MMA return of Justin Wren. He's got a lot of great publicity this week, a fantastic story. Said that you met with him several times along the way as he was making his decision to come back to MMA. Just tell us a little bit about what those conversations were like and why you thought, man, let's give this guy a chance in returning to fighting.
You know what? What a special human being, you know, to his mission and his goal to really give back to humanity. And that's really what it is. I mean, I always ask him, hey, are you worried? Like, you might be in danger. You're in danger over there. I think he's giving up his safety to go and, you know, create water for, you know, the tribes over there. I said, man, that is really admirable. And the more I got to know it and the more I heard his story, I said, wow, this guy is somebody that we should have on here. Then we started talking, and we really had some honest conversations, just sitting down and just him saying his feelings and I'm saying my feelings, and we had some really, you know, I felt like we had a good bond. And so I said, look, go think about it, go do your thing, go talk to whoever you want to talk to, and if you want to sign with us, let us know. And so, you know, came back and here he is.
Very cool. It is admirable what he's doing. Looking forward to this card, but obviously I think everybody is already starting to look towards September. Dynamite, you know, this revolutionary event. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I know that you're on record saying that you're expecting a packed house. What can you update us about the card? We know kind of who's going to be in it, but I think a lot of people are still questioning how's the tournament going to work out? Are the matchups set yet? Is that going to be done, you know, soon? Is there alternates involved? Who is it going to be? So what can you tell us just to kind of prime us for that tournament that everybody's looking forward to?
Well, I can tell you, here it is. Here's the alternate fight right here. Dynamite. There you go. A periscope.
Perfect. Nothing like breaking
so,
news.
Yeah. Carmon versus Lenz. And this is going to be an alternate fight. And that'll be the first fight of the night. As far as the tournament format, that's something we're going to announce tomorrow night. Okay. We're still doing the final touches with the commission. And then we'll have an official card for the broadcast tomorrow. So that's one piece of it. But, you know, I'm not sure if you've seen the 30-second spot, but when I saw what Spike created, it was like, wow, that's really amazing. And to have Tito fight, you know, pretty tough fight. I mean, let's face it. Tito had some other choices to fight other people, right? And I was like, Tito, do you really want to do it? He's like, I want to do it. He boxed me into a corner, basically, to get this fight. And I said, okay, be careful what you wish for, because now you have to go climb the big hill. And so he wants to do it. He, as a martial artist, as a fighter, this is what he needs to rise to the occasion. You know, that's really what I felt from him is, hey, he needs this. And the title's important, but the journey is just as important for him. So he wants to rise to the occasion and really test himself. And he said, hey, my whole career, people doubted me. And, you know, there's some that I won, there's some that I lost, but I got 6 belts. I've done everything in MMA. I said, that's true. But originally we had him trying to fight Frank Shamrock. That was the original fight. And Frank actually agreed. So we got Frank to agree. Went to Tito, and he's like, nope, I want to fight Liam McGarry or Emmanuel Newton for the title. And I was like, God, you know, Shamrock versus Ortiz in San Jose would have been just a monster fight.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm thinking like a promoter here. But he didn't want to do it, and he just kept bugging me. And then when Liam fought Emmanuel, he just kept tapping me on the shoulder saying, I want to fight the winner of those two. And so finally I called his manager and said, look, we really wanted to fight someone else. You know, and he's like, no, he wants to fight those two. Because he'll fight somebody after, but this fight he wants to fight for the belt. So I really kind of boxed in a corner, said, all right, then, you know, you got it, but you better train hard and get ready. So
it's a big challenge. Do you think, you're mentioning now that Frank Shamrock was in, do you think he'd be in for another fight, or do you think we'll see Frank fight again?
Oh no, I think Frank was like, you know, basically gonna do me a favor. For old time's sake, Frank, let's go do this. But yeah, I think Frank's on to other things and he's doing fantastic. But he will be part of the Fan Fest, and he will be you know, part of our whole week of festivities there, and as well as, you know, we announced today Sakuraba is going to come, we got Randy Couture and Hoist Gracie and Fedor Emelianenko and Kung Lee, Shamrock, and then Kimbo Slice is also going to be there. Not to the Fan Fest, but the next day he'll be signing at the SAP during the as people come in. So it's going to be a lot of big stars, and we have a lot of fighters from, you know, every league that wants to come. So we're getting all the ticket requests in, and there's a lot. It's going to be a big event for martial arts. You know, it's like a martial arts festival. And I think we're going to have a great showing.
That's awesome. Well, you brought up Fedor Emelianenko's name. You know, I have to ask that question there. Now, I've heard you say that you haven't had any discussions with him about fighting. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I just don't believe that one bit, man. You were in the Fedor Emelianenko business for a long time. I know you had that relationship. So to hear that he's training for a comeback and to think that Scott Coker has not at least had a conversation with Fedor about the possibility. So what's really happening there?
You know what? That is true. We've had conversations, but not about fighting, you know. And you know, I just felt like, look, Fedor is a great legend. He's on the Mount Rushmore of MMA. You know, him and Hoyce and Tito and those, you know. And we had a great time doing the fights together with Fedor and M1. No comment. And so, you know, I felt like we've done it. You know, we've done it already. And so, you know, I felt like, look, you know, we have a great roster. We have a great thing going. And so when he comes back into the market, I felt like he's going to come back in for, I bet, 3-4 years. He's not going to come back for one fight. He's going to come back. And he is coming back, for sure. He's training, I know. And we'll see him on the 19th, and we can talk to him. But I'm not sure, you know, where he's going, whether he's, you know, close to signing with the UFC. I hear rumors of this and that. I really don't know, and I haven't asked them. So that is the truth.
So are you saying that you're just not interested right now, but maybe you see what he brings to the table when he does come back, he fights somewhere else, and then maybe reevaluate?
Yeah, you know, to me it's like, let's let him, you know, come back and see how it works out for him, and then maybe, you know, we'll have him fight, you know, later, a couple of years down the line, or next year. Whatever. I mean, the door is open. But I felt like, you know, at this point, you know, Bellator is, you know, kind of on a little bit of a roll here. And sure, would he add a lot of value? Yes. But I think that, you know, we're going to just sit back and see what happens.
I'm going to ask you about another guy, Brandon Halsey, super talented fighter. Mm-hmm. Looks like he really has a bright future, but did have a little bit of a hiccup in that he didn't make weight, was stripped of the title, which, of course, was the only decision you could make at that point. Where does he stand now? Is the relationship okay there? Are you able to work through things? Where does Brandon Halsey stand with the organization?
Brandon Halsey and Bellator, myself, we're perfectly fine. We just signed him to a new deal, and so he'll be fighting in October at the Mohegan Sun fight against Carvalho. So that's going to be the fight that's Brandon's next fight. That's the 23rd. So, you know, he's fine. He's just, you know, they were a little bit upset about a few things, and you know, it's just these things happen. And what happened was he was injured, so he couldn't cut the weight, right? And so, you know, it's just stuff happens in this business. So we had a little bit of a hiccup, but now we're back to square one. And everybody loves everybody now. So let's put it that way. It's all good. You know, they're happy until they're not happy, and then they're happy until they're not happy. That's just how it works.
You mentioned earlier on, as we were talking to Ed Ruth, Aaron Pico, you know, this movement that you guys are making to sign guys that are still years away from being a professional fighter. Right. I think it's a brilliant move, especially, you know, these guys that are just uber prospects that look like they're going to be something. But tell me how that philosophy came about and, you know, what kind of guts, I guess, it takes to make a long-term play like that, because, I mean, you don't know that it's necessarily going to pay off.
Right. I mean, really it was Bob Cook that came to me and said, you got to sign this guy. And the last time he came to me and said, you got to sign this guy, it was Daniel Cormier, Luke Rockhold, you know, I don't know, Tyron Woodley, Ronda Rousey. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Bob, you know, he wasn't training some of these people, but he said, this is the guy. That's the guy. That's the guy. And so we would go out and you know, it worked out. So when Bob or Javier say to me, hey, you got to sign this guy. This guy is going to be the future of your company. I don't even ask. I just say, how much? And then we just write the check, and then, you know, then everything works out. So that's basically how I didn't even know who Aaron Pico was, right? He said, you got to sign this kid. He's going to be a rock star. And I said, okay, well, then let's sign him. Bring him down. We met his dad. He was only 17 at the time when we met him. And I said, we really can't sign you right now. But when you turn 18, give us a call. He turns 18, comes, flies down. We had a nice meeting with his father and got to know the dad and the family. It's just a really nice family here from L.A. And, in fact, he's going to be here tomorrow night. But then it was just a matter of, okay, what are your goals? You know, you want to continue to box, you want to continue to wrestle, you want to start fighting MMA, and really they all want to fight. I mean, I can feel it in their voice, you know, and they all want to fight, but they have this thing called Olympics that they're, you know, go represent our country, right? And so we worked out a deal where we're going to support them, you know, and help them along the way and make it comfortable for them to, you know, go after the Olympic dream. And then when they're done, they'll come here. So if they go Olympic trials and it doesn't work out, they'll come start fighting. If it goes, they win the gold medal, then after that, they'll come fight. So to me, it was a calculated risk. And, you know, when Bob Cook says this is the guy, or Javier says this is the guy, I mean, honestly, 99% of the time it's worked out. So, you know, I don't even ask questions anymore. Bob says this is the guy. I just say, how much? What do we need to get him signed up?
That's funny. You mentioned Josh Thompson coming back into the fold.
Oh, yeah.
A guy that puts on very exciting fights. I wonder, because you know, here's, you're talking about signing fighters that haven't even had a professional fight yet. Then
right.
There's, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum. Josh Thompson, very established veteran, been around the game for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what's your overall philosophy right now? Is there a need, hey, we need to go out and find the next stars of MMA, or hey, we need to go get recognizable names that we can bring in the fold? What's the overall philosophy?
I mean, the philosophy is really building from the ground up and buying from the top down, right? And everything, every situation is different. I mean, for instance, like Josh Koscheck, for instance. If we didn't have Paul Daly, we might not have signed him. But now we have Paul Daly already. That's a no-brainer. Because to me, we'll build that fight, and maybe next summer we'll promote that fight in London, or might do it here in San Jose or in Fresno, whatever. But I knew that by the time that fight happens, it'll be built up to the point, and we'll paint such a, you know, we'll repaint the picture just like we did with the Kimbo. It's going to be a big blockbuster for us. And so to me, that was a very clear picture. Josh, here's another guy. Never seen him in a boring fight. Always brought it. I thought he won the title. I thought that he won the next fight. You know, the last one, he didn't work out. He got caught. But, you know, the guy's a warrior, man. And a guy like that can fight for me anytime. I mean, you know, there's guys that, you know, well, there's no surfing allowed in Bellator, right? The surfing thing, don't come surf here because you're not going to have a long career. So these guys are the opposite end of that spectrum. You know, they're going to bring it, and they're going to bring it every time. And Josh is one of those guys. And, you know, let's face it, he was one of the guys that was the building block for Strikeforce. And so I feel a certain, you know, loyalty to him. And I think he does back, and we're friends, and, you know, we're family friends. And it's just a good feeling to have him back. And I'm telling you, on any given night, this guy could beat anybody. That's how I feel. On any given night, if he wants it. Like, if he has that drive in him and he has a good training camp and he's not injured, on any given night, he's a dangerous fighter.
No doubt. Let's talk about the rest of 2015. In addition to this weekend, we know we got a September show, an October show, a November show.
Mm-hmm.
You think you'll do anything in December? Will you take a month off? Or?
Oh, no, we're going to go in December. We're going to go to Fresno. I'm not sure the exact date, but I think you'll see the debut of Koscheck in December. December 11th. Oh, there you go. It's December 11th in Fresno, California. And you'll see the debut of Josh Koscheck, and Honeycutt's going to fight there. And we're going to have a great fight card at the State Mart Center.
Fantastic. It's a great venue there. 2016, are you already into planning 2016? If so, is there any teases, anything at all? I mean, I know it's still a few months away and that sort of thing, but anything that's already on your radar?
You know, I'll tell you, we do have, we have about, we have, this year we did 16 fights. Next year we're going to do about 22 to 24 fights. So we're going to increase the volume. We're going to go from 4 10 pole events to 7, which one will be the Dynamite show. So we'll have 6 normal 10 pole fights, and then one will be the Dynamite.
And the second Dynamite show next year?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that is kind of developing into a brand of its own, you know. And really, I mean, you know, Dynamite in Japan, that was like one of the just amazing shows. But, you know, they did all theirs in the ring. Right, it was a one apparatus type thing, but I said to myself when I had the chance to put this fight together, I said, you know, wouldn't it be cool? What if, right? And we just passed it around. People loved it. They drew the nice little picture. I said, let's do it, man. And I called the commission, and Andy Foster said, hey, you know what? Let's go for it. And so it just happened, and it was kind of an organic situation. But now you get to see the best kickboxers in the world with Glory. And then you get to see the best MMA in the tournament, and then the undercard fight. I mean, it's just going to be a great night. So, you know, it's going to be a special. And I think that people are going to love it. I think it's going to get great ratings. And I think that we'll do it every year and build it as a separate, you know, entity.
But ramping back up the volume. I mean, everybody was kind of praising you for slowing down a little bit, and now you're bringing
it
back up.
Let's talk about that, because when I came into the company and I told Kevin Kay, who has been just amazing in this process, him and John Slusser, and we have Jason Jordan from our company that are, you know, all the executives in Spike. And but Kevin said to me, well, what do you think? You know, I said, we don't have the roster right now to be doing 24 fights a year, right? And we are in a restructuring period because we're going to change locations of the company. We're going to move from Newport Beach. Half of them are Santa Monica, half of them are in San Jose. That took time. We got to be on the road throwing these fights. We got, you know, all these landmines all over the place. Let's fix all that. So we need to take a step back, you know. Then we can ramp it back up. So that's really what why we took a step back. And so, you know, if you think about it, 16 fights is a lot of fights, but that was taking a step backwards. And now that we feel, I feel like we're kind of in a little groove, let's say, you're gonna ramp it back up, and we're gonna, you know, go out there. Because next year, we're also gonna do some international fights. Right? I just got back from Tel Aviv in Israel. We have a deal with Israeli TV there. I was in Italy, I was in London. We have deals with OSN in the Middle East. We have a deal with Celestial Tiger in Southeast Asia and Macau, Hong Kong. There's 140 countries that watch Bellator every time we throw a fight. And it's amazing. And to go out there and talk to these guys, you know, these are station owners, and they love Bellator. They love the fights. They said the ratings are unbelievable, and we want you to come here and throw a fight, right? So we're going through the process of deciding where we're going to go and who we're going to go. But, you know, we're going to throw some international fights. They're going to be off the hook next year. So I'm really, really excited.
That's awesome. Well, Scott, I know we've all got to run over to weigh-ins real quick, so I want to thank you very much for the time. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that that you want to get out there for the fans?
You know what? Just tune in, man. We're going to have some great fights, and, you know, Bellator is definitely growing, and, you know, grow with us.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Bellator MMA President Scott Coker. And Cole Coffey, obviously you were behind the camera for that and trying to do a little periscoping as well. But I don't know. Did you enjoy the conversation as much as I did?
I did. And just like to harken back what you were saying earlier, I thought that he was so relaxed and so, you know, at ease. And it kind of reminded me, just like when some of these fighters that have went over and they said that Bellator has embraced the personalities, has embraced them being themselves. And it seems like that literally is now, from what I just saw, is coming from the top down.
Right.
You know, you saw a guy that he's living by the same thing that he's telling the fighters. He believes in what's going on. He's relaxed. I mean, why not? I mean, like, they've done their shows have been incredible. I've really enjoyed the production side that they've been adding to it. So, I mean, they got to be really, really happy. But, no, I thought it was great. I thought some of the stuff that he said was just incredible, and I loved how he was playing to the periscope. You know, and we kind of threw that as a screwball, you know, because it just, unfortunately, you know, was trying to test it at the point where he kind of walked up and was like, well, shit, let's just roll with it. And he kind of ran with the punches. It was like, hey, do you mind if we do this? And he was like, no, let's do it. You know, I'm just like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Would Dana do that? Probably not. I mean, he probably wants some little forewarning or whatever, but that's what I love about the whole thing. It's like, you got nothing to hide. You know, I know my shit. I know what I can release. I know whatever. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I think with just sticking with that theme, he was probably just like, fuck it. Let's just give him some good shit. And I think what was funny at the end is afterwards, he's kind of like, yeah, I probably gave you more than I thought, but hey, that's all right.
He got a little carried away. I think he broke more news than he wanted to break, but it was a lot of fun. It definitely made the interview worthwhile. And as I said, it was just awesome to see Scott speaking so freely and comfortably. And, you know, it does seem like things are going in a very positive direction for everybody at Bellator MMA. So now we'll just hope the fights live up to everything that we had behind the scenes. And, of course, a lot of big shows on the horizon, the Dynamite show. I think a lot of people are really, really looking forward to that.
Yeah,
it should be
looking forward
to that
one.
So, well, we said it was a busy week at the MMA Roadshow. It definitely was. I want to bring you another interview we did earlier this week, and that is with UFC featherweight champion Jose Aldo. Interesting. This interview came out of absolutely nowhere. Tuesday morning came around, and I think you were just slated to kind of hang out around the house and do some editing that morning.
Editing, just chill out.
I was supposed to go into the radio show, and we get a call from UFC PR that says, hey, are you interested in coming on down and talking to Jose Aldo in 2 hours? Like, well, yes, we are. but there were stipulations around it, and that was you cannot say anything. There is no social media. There is no nothing to say that he's even in town. There's nothing to say that you're there. You have to embargo this content until the next day at 3 p.m. Pacific, and it all boiled around the fact that, of course, Conor McGregor is still in Las Vegas as well, and I think they were starting to do the promos and starting to do some of the official work for their meeting at UFC 194 later this year. But I think they wanted Conor McGregor to be a little bit surprised when Jose Aldo showed up.
Yeah.
Doesn't take a rocket scientist or a private detective to figure out. They probably did some filming on The Ultimate Fighter. I don't know why else they would want somebody surprised for a photo shoot. Yeah. But we're not allowed to know any of that. I guess we'll just all have to tune in to The Ultimate Fighter and see if that came out. But what that all meant was that we got to sit down with Jose Aldo, and this is the first time that we've really gotten to talk to him in the United States since, of course, the whole injury withdrawal and everything that happened. He's been in Brazil the whole time. He's not a huge media darling, so to speak. You know, he's not rude by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, he's very polite. He's a very friendly person. But when it comes to interviews, it's just not really his thing. He just doesn't care. He'd rather fight and then go home and play FIFA on his PlayStation. Yeah. You know, he doesn't really want to do interviews. But he did sit down with us, which was fantastic. What we did was, through the magic of editing, we're going to play this interview now, but you actually did a little bit of editing just to kind of shorten things up a little bit. Instead of having to hear everything go back and forth, you're going to hear Andre Pettinaris, his voice, over Jose Aldo's interpreting everything, translating everything. And we just thought that that would be a lot more pleasant on the listener to hear the whole interview, because we've seen some bits and pieces of it on MMA Junkie, but we said, listen, let's play the whole thing so you can hear from start to finish how the whole thing played out. But rather than go back and forth and translate the whole thing, we just thought it made more sense to lay it out that way.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, you try to maintain that real truth to an interview. A lot of times I feel that, you know, when you're hearing it straight from the guy's mouth and then you're hearing a lot of things, you know, I like to take that approach. And most times where, you know, you take a hands-off, you let it lay out there, you know, you let it – you're getting it like we got it.
I agree.
You know, but you're right. In this point, it would have been about added another 13 to 20 minutes. You know, it was like a 30-minute interview, which can drag on. You know, ultimately, we want you guys to be able to take all the facts and take all the info that you're hearing and not be drowned out and be the point where it gets to, like, minute 22, where you're like, I'm fucking dying here.
Right.
Can this interview be over, you know? So, yeah, we took the audio and laid it underneath. So the English that you hear, Jose did not all of a sudden learn English, you know, as much as – and that's, you know, I think where a lot of – you know, where maybe if he was trying to learn more English and do other stuff, maybe he would be maybe more into the interviews. And, you know, and then the same side, you know, when we do put a lot of things out there, you know, a lot of people are bashing and saying, learn English, do this, this, this. It's like, how about you learn fucking Portuguese?
Exactly.
Like, lay off a little bit. So – we kind of shortcut that a little bit and just sort of did what we did and laid the translation over top. So you might hear some of Jose. And, you know, and if enough people are, you know, should you guys be like, hey, I want to hear the unedited version, I'm fine with, like, putting another version out somewhere just online so people can actually see
the other
version.
Maybe if somebody wants to hear the original Portuguese, they happen to be Portuguese speakers or something like that.
And then, because, you never know. Because, I mean, as we've learned recently from our own NSAC ordeal, that a lot of times words can be taken in multiple ways. One translator might say it one thing, another guy says it another one, and you know, that I'm definitely not opposed to that. So if that's something that people are interested, hit us up via social media. Say, hey, yeah, I'd love to hear the unedited version, and we'll get that out there. But so that's why we did what we did, and it was great. You know, I thought Jose was relaxed and he was just easy, you know. I mean, granted, all the faces around the table, there were no, you know, killers
familiar
at the
faces.
Table. There are a lot of familiar faces, so, you know, I think he felt at ease about that. And of course, it was a lunch meeting, so, you know, the sooner you get through the interview, everybody was getting fed, so I think he was into that as well. But I thought it was a great interview, and you know, I guess we should just be thankful that we got 2 hours notice rather than, you know, 30 minutes notice, you know, or something.
It was nice to be able to make it. Ultimately, I'm sure you've seen some of the headlines. He does believe that he was misrepresented, that the Brazilian media mistranslated what he said as far as about the IV ban and those things. So he addresses a lot of those topics. I know some of the Brazilian media disagrees with what he said. I've seen some reaction on Twitter, but we figured we'd let you hear the whole thing. So as we sit back and relax, Bellator PR whiz extraordinaire Danny Brenner has sat down to just kind of hang out with us a little bit while we finish
like
up.
Bellator royalty over here. I mean,
I'm telling you, they're taking good care of us this week. I can't complain about it right now, I got to say. So we're going to get caught up with him real quick, and while we do that, You guys can listen to Jose Aldo in his entirety, the media lunch that he had with the Las Vegas-based media. You're going to hear Brett Okamoto's voice chime in there. You're going to hear Jeremy Botter's voice chime in there as well. You'll hear Chris Matthews, who is a local
ABC.
Ah, I know Chris too, man. Yeah. Not for bad. I like Chris a lot. He actually used to do Tough Enough with us a couple of times way back in the day. CBS affiliate. I knew it was Sports 8, but I couldn't remember the affiliate. He is a local CBS affiliate in Las Vegas. You'll hear them there. Adam Hill rolled in a little bit late. I don't know if he joined in with any questions.
I was thinking about that. I don't know if – did we start early?
Well, I think he might have come in late just because Adam Hill does, like, super late-night radio and stuff like that. So he might have gotten late notice.
Yeah, I was starting to think that maybe we rolled early, but I don't think we did. But who knows?
Anyway, so, all right, we're going to get caught up with Danny Brenner while you do that. You can listen to Jose Aldo and Andre Pedernieres. Well, I guess just first and foremost, let's get the update on the injury, the recovery, how he is right now as far as his health is concerned.
I'm feel good. The injury is much better right now. I can start a training, but not start it yet because not start a really training for this fight. But I don't have any concern about this right now.
We haven't had the opportunity to see him in a couple months, so not to bring up old news, but the whole process, the whole frustration and miscommunication, how did he feel as that was all unfolding where people really weren't sure what the injury was, what the status was? How did he feel during that process?
About the injuries, I'm very sad about that. About the miscommunication, I understand because sometimes I say something to the journalist in Brazil, and the moment the guy translates on that, my interview is almost totally wrong. But I understand.
So it's safe to say that the relationship with the UFC and everything is good at this point?
About my part, everything's fine, always. And then I don't care about what the guys said. From my side, it's going to be inside the cage and do what I need to do.
Can you tell us how he watched the Conor McGregor and Chad Mendes fight? Did he watch it live? Did he watch it by himself? Did he have people around him? You know, how did he watch the fight and what did he think about it as he was watching it?
No, I not see the fight. I don't want to see Conor fighting with anybody. But a lot of friends call me and talk to me, oh, you're going to kill this guy for sure.
That seems weird. I mean, does he normally watch people fight, or why would he make the decision not to watch? I would think you would want to watch and kind of break him down a little bit.
No.
I don't see anybody, any opponents before the fight because they have a good team to analyze these guys. And then after that, the guys send to us, and I analyze with my coach and everything. Doesn't matter what he do or not.
Wouldn't you want to know right away if Conor won, though? Because, I mean, it's a huge fight. If Chad were to beat him, then you lose that fight. Wouldn't you want to watch just to see it live and know that Conor won or not?
No.
Like I say, I don't care about him. And I don't care about what he's doing. But I know if Chad is training hard for this fight, the results are totally different.
Will you train differently going into this fight, knowing what happened in the last fight when you got injured? Will there be a different approach? Maybe, you know, as the fight approaches, will you train a little differently or take a few more precautions so that something like that doesn't happen again?
I do exactly what I do always. I train exactly the same. The only thing is different. Lorenzo giving me a light t-shirt to protect the hips that I use. Nothing different than that.
What did you do instead of watching the fight that night when Conor McGregor fought Chad Mendes? Did he go out with friends? Did he like sit on the boat?
He go to the friend's house to see a game, the soccer game.
Watch the soccer game.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, when John asks how's your relationship with the UFC, a lot of people, you know, they take that as meaning how's your relationship with Dana White. It was Dana White who took a lot of the criticism. You know, people thought that he disrespected Jose, and can Jose just clarify, did he ever feel disrespected by anything Dana White said or did?
I have a dinner with them in Brazil, and the both sides talk a lot about this thing, and then he said Dana don't disrespect him, just a misunderstanding about the communications is the problem in this situation right now. I don't have any problem with Dana or Lorenzo or UFC.
And when was that dinner? When did the dinner take place?
No.
One day before the UFC Rio. Honda UFC battle.
Since he didn't watch the fight, was he surprised when he heard Conor won?
I know before this fight happened, I know Conor won because he don't have a time to train hard. He received the news like 18 days before the fight. He need to cut the weight, not training hard, and I know he's hunting, not training at all and at the gym. I know everything's happened, and I know before the fight, for sure, Conor won the fight.
I know he didn't watch that fight, but has he watched any of Conor's fights at all? Because Conor has such unique movements, you know, the unique style. He's so different than a lot of people. Has he watched any of his tape at all just to study the way that Conor moves?
Yeah. We watched all the tapes from him together, and I analyzed everything about him. I know he's a danger guy, but not to beat the Aldo for sure.
So you will eventually watch the Mendez Conor fight?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
The next time, right now, I for sure analyze that.
Can you help? Maybe it's a communication thing as well. To get him to clarify comments on the IV ban that's coming up. We've seen comments coming out of Brazil that he's saying, "I don't care. I'm still going to do it." Obviously, there's very stiff penalties if that's the case. Is that a miscommunication as well, or does he stand behind that?
No, it's just make a joking in the meeting, and then he smile all the time about that. It's just everybody know if you have a hose, you need. See the rules and do exactly what you need to do.
So he was really just making a joke and the reporters reported as he was being serious?
Yeah, for sure. But Giovanni Decker is a director, president from Brazil. He stayed in the meeting and saw everything. He knows it's just joking from him.
Has he used IVs for every fight or is it sometimes?
Sometimes he used, sometimes not. He's not got a lot of weight. His normal weight is like 162. If we put him right now in the scale, he's 162.
Manny Pacquiao went into that fight with Mayweather with that injury. Were you close to actually following through with the fight despite the injury, or was it no matter what, he's not going to fight, you're not going to fight? Or was there like some conversation like, maybe I could do it, maybe I should? I mean, how close was that to Jose actually going into the ring?
He try a lot to fight. He go to PRP and try make a like a De Niro like that inside the ribs and put his blood inside the bone to try fix it to that. He really tried to fight. He want to fight. I have all the move here. He try everything.
Yeah. You have the what?
I have the tape in the hospital, the neuro, everything here to try to fight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How bothered were you that Conor basically made your injury up to be just a bruise, basically? I mean, he acted like it wasn't anything that you should get in the ring, and despite that, you know, because we didn't know how serious it was, and he obviously didn't either, but... How bothered were you by all that?
I don't care about what the opponent said. For me, it's just a joker. And then, but I have a lot of pain. I'm still like a baby in my bed because I can't move too much. Always I need help from my wife and my friends to move my body. And I don't care about, you know.
Going back to the IV ban again, is he going to have... He's going to struggle not being able to use it, trying to make weight.
What do you mean struggle?
Is it going to be hard for him to make weight now?
I give my opinion. I think it's more harder for Conor make the weight and not have IV for him than for Aldo. Aldo just cut like 15 pounds. How much Conor cut the weight? Yeah. For sure, it's terrible for him. And not terrible for Aldo. I prefer put the both guys after the weigh-in. You have a camera for 24 hours before the fight and see everything what both is doing before the fight. I know him not put AV. for sure, because I don't need that. But I don't know Conor. How many pounds he make the weight back without heavy? He probably cut like a 30 pounds, and Aldo just 15. Who do you think need more IV, Aldo or Conor?
When is the last time he did not use an IV after a weigh-in?
Like 3 years ago. It started like a 2.5, 3 years ago, because it's easy to do. You put the IV in.
Who does it? Do you do it for him?
No. I have almost always, I bring a doctor to put IV here.
And he's used it for every fight in the past 2.5, 3 years?
Can you repeat?
You said he started about 3 years ago?
Yeah, 2.5, 3 years
and
ago.
And has he done it for every single fight in those 3 years?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The ban is for 50 milliliters. How much do you use when you rehydrate guys?
1.5, 1,500 milligrams.
1,500? Okay, so a lot.
Like three bags, like 500 milligrams. I think everybody do the same. I think so. 1,000, 1,500.
He said that he wasn't surprised that Conor B. Chad were you, Day-Day?
No, for sure, because I know, like, if you analyze Chad Mendes from young to now, you see in his body, he trained a lot of physical preparation all his life to beat all the guys in wrestling and the MMA, because wrestling, like wrestlers like Chad Mendes, he need to be very prepared in his physical to beat the other guys. If not, he lose for sure. And if you give it to that guy like that, just 18 days to prepare his body, it's impossible. The guy is not training for 3 months, and you give it to him 18 days. His mind is lost before the fight. Because in his mind, I'm not training harder. I'm not to do any physical preparation for this fight. He's lost before this fight. Before he go inside the octagon, his mind is dying, man. Because for sure, he can be prepared for this fight. But if you give it to him 3 months to prepare, I put all my money and Chad Mendes, for sure.
I haven't heard what the UFC's plan is for promoting this fight, but if they want to do another big world tour and all those stops and all that time, is Jose willing to do that again, or would he prefer a little bit different this time?
No way. Yeah. No way. 10 days outside from his house is terrible, for sure. For sure. He wants to do a commercial, but not stay for 10 days, fly for everywhere to do a this thing again, for sure. But if he need to do, he's doing. But if you prefer, no, prefer stay in the his out, for sure.
Was that the worst thing you've ever had to do in this sport? Was that world tour?
What? Eating bad, sleeping bad, every day is sleeping in one city and wake up in another city, is so bad, for
was
sure.
Was there anything fun about it at all? Anything at all you enjoyed?
Nada que tivesse gostado.
Ah, eu acho que...
I love the fans, for sure. And then I saw the soccer game, Brazil versus Chile, at that time. That's it. He loves football. He loves football. Yesterday, I go to two with him, and I make some positions, some drills. And like in 40 minutes, it start to be a soccer inside the mat and finish the training. That's it.
What's it like in Brazil? Is it just like nonstop every day a million people coming up to you and say, you have to beat Conor? We have to see you beat this guy? I mean, is it unlike any other fight in your career in that way?
Porra, it's not only in Brazil, here too. Every fun that I saw him say to me, you need to kill this guy, man. This guy has a big mouth. You want to kill this guy? Please.
Has there ever been anything even close to that?
Like close, like when he fought with Ryan Faber, many guys talked to me, hey, you need to punch this guy because he's have a face like a playboy. But this guy doesn't know, Ryan is such a nice guy. He's a really, really nice guy. He's a really, really nice guy.
My mate is good guy, no?
And he's mentally, Ryan is a good guy.
What was the score of the soccer game that you watched when Conor fought Chad? I have a hard time believing you didn't watch that fight.
Porra, tava no quintal comendo churrasco.
Não lembro. Ele a game from Flamengo, his team, and then he eating a churrasco, a barbecue outside his friend's house.
There was some talk of this fight perhaps being in Dallas, whatever. Just, I guess, Joe, just some thoughts on this fight back in Vegas in December, just, you know, having it back here.
I'm very happy to fight here. When I was a kid, I saw a lot of big boxing fights, and always in Vegas. And then in his mind, one day I'll be a fighter, and I will be fighting in Vegas for sure.
You know, we know Conor talks a lot, but is Conor good for the sport?
I don't know if Conor is good for the sport, but for me, for sure, yes. And then I want to see more Conor come to my weight class to fight with me like him, talk too much, because he put a lot of money in my pocket, for sure.
What's Jose's take on emotions in a fight? We hear some fighters say that, you know, when they hate a guy, they don't like a guy, it motivates them to train harder, to fight harder. Then we hear other fighters say you can't have emotion on fight night because you have to think, you have to be technical. What's his take on that?
I don't bring any emotion to inside the octagon and not my training too. I know we have a lot of guys coming to the street. You need to beat this guy badly, but I never put this thing in my mind. I just train hard. And I think my day is coming, and the day I go inside the ring, I stay calm and finish this guy for sure.
Is there a perfect scenario for him and how the fight plays out? Is it, you know, a brutal knockout? Is it get the job done quick and go home? Is it make it last so the guy learns a lesson? What's the perfect scenario for Jose?
The best scenario for me is the victor. Doesn't matter if I beat this guy by KO or submission or by points. Doesn't matter to me. I just go inside that and beat this guy for sure.
Lógico, se acabar a luta o quanto antes, eu vou embora para casa.
But for sure, if you beat this guy fast, I go home.
I mean, you understand how this sport works really well. Do you think that it's inevitable you guys will probably fight twice? Or do you think it's one fight and then you beat him so bad and he comes back?
I prefer to happen more times because I put more money in my pocket, for sure. I'm going inside the ring, I beat this guy. If it happens again, it's good, because I saw this thing happen with Sonnen and Anderson. If it happens again with me, it's good, for sure. He just think about the money, for sure.
Does he see Conor as any threat at all? I mean, obviously he's always been respectful of his opponents, but does he see Conor as any threat at all, or does he feel very confident that it's not even a fight?
I always respect all my opponents, and with Conor it's not different. And then I train hard for the fight. I be concentrated. I'm just focused on my opponent. Go inside the ring and finish this guy. But always respect everybody.
What's your final message then to Conor McGregor? What would be your final message to him?
A win. I'm still champion for sure.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was UFC featherweight champion Jose Aldo, who, if you take him at his word, would lead you to believe that, A, everything is just fine with the UFC, and B, he was extremely misunderstood. The guy's never lied to me. I have no reason to not believe him, but I still don't feel like everything is completely resolved there. I just don't feel like it's ever going to be resolved, to be honest with you. I don't think we're ever going to know exactly all that happened. I think what bottom line at the end of the day, we had a massive fight planned at UFC 189, millions of dollars. I mean, millions and millions of dollars spent in advertising. The entire MMA world was excited for this fight, and it didn't happen. And I think everybody was looking for somebody to blame, and sometimes it's just circumstances.
You know, and that's true. And, you know, then other, you know, points that came out that were just seemed hard to believe is also, you know, like, oh, I didn't watch the fight. I was off watching barbecue, you know, or having barbecue at a friend's house, you know. It's like, really?
You didn't buy
that? And like, eh. I mean, like, I guess I could, but, you know, I mean, how could – I don't know. It just seems a little like a stretch, but who knows? I mean, maybe it also, too, maybe it's a bravado thing that maybe in Brazil that just shows again that maybe, oh, you're so cool that you're not even worried about watching them on TV. He's like, no, man, I'm having barbecue, man. I'm cool. In fact, don't even bring it up, brah. Don't even bring it up. That's how Jose sounds when he's in port. Except if you took that and made it Portuguese, that's how
that's
it would
exactly
sound.
How it was.
Yeah, he'd be like, obrigado, 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 obrigado.
Tudo bem.
Tudo bem. Tudo bem. Mais uma. Mais uma.
Well, listen, it was good in the meantime while I was planning to get caught up with. I called him a PR extraordinaire. He is a director of communications, Danny Brenner. That guy is moving up in the world.
Man. Yeah, get it straight,
I sold him
man.
Short, man. I sold him short on that.
You might not get any more Coker interviews.
Telling you what, man. I really appreciate him doing that. So, all right, listen, we've got one more interview to play for you this week. Did have a chance to sit down earlier this week. And speak on the phone briefly with Paige.
I was going to say on the phone. It was in person. I'd be upset you didn't call me on.
That's why I corrected myself because, in fairness, I did sit down and talk with Paige Van Sant. I just was sitting down
at your place.
On the phone. Yeah,
and she was at her place.
Presumably sitting down somewhere else. But did have a chance to talk with Paige Van Sant. Wanted to include this interview for a couple of reasons. Number one, of course, Paige Van Sant. I don't want to say the biggest stars because she's not one of the biggest stars yet, but she's one of the people that's being pushed out there. One of the fastest rises to stardom. I mean, obviously has a Reebok deal already. You know, had a Reebok deal before the champ did in her division. Mm-hmm. Has only fought twice in the UFC, but somebody that people are latching onto. Extremely young, definitely a bright future ahead of her. Definitely has that kind of that it factor that you really can't quantify. It just has to have it or not. And so it was an opportunity to talk to her about. You know, what it's going to take for her to keep her humility, what she has on the horizon, what she wants to do. She's made it clear that she thinks Ronda Rousey is an incredible, incredible role model. She'd like to live up to that. And just wanted to include all that. But you know why I also wanted to include it? Because I'm still trying to figure out all the phone technology, and I think I'm getting closer. We're trying to figure out this podcast as we go. And we are not professionals. I mean, we are professionals, but not at podcasting.
Well, you know, we're definitely learning. And the thing is, I mean, it's one, it would take so much work to ever be able to bring fighters out and always get with them to where we can actually, here, let's wire you up, let's wire me up, you know, blah, blah, blah. That eventually the phone is, it's going to enable a lot of things. So, yeah, I mean.
Well, we are the MMA Roadshow, but every now and then we are stuck at home.
Yeah.
And I still want to be able to bring some things.
And there's always hiccups, in, you know, and we appreciate in people's understandings that things happen. You know, we are new. And, I mean. With some nice sponsorship or whatnot, or maybe, you know, people can kick in. You know, we will buy the finest stuff to reinvest back in, you know. So, if you know, if USA Today or BW3s or other people want to put even more
Airbnb. Uber would be good.
Uber. I mean, I'm just saying, guys. Hey,
beer company would be good, like any beer company, because I drink pretty much everything.
I mean, I'm just saying, I have no tattoos on my body, but I might be willing to put a tattoo for the first time if the sponsor is big enough.
That guy from the Wednesday, he's run out of space. Maybe if he wants another tattoo.
Oh, my Lord. Man likes his ink. Likes his ink.
I have to go back through the video. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but that was some of the most ink I've ever seen. That was incredible.
It was good, though. He was like literally like a paint canvas.
All right. Well, we're starting to wrap things up here in Temecula, California, but I did want to bring this last interview with Paige Van Zandt because, listen, she is one of the fastest rising stars. She is fun to talk to, and I was kind of interested. You know, we didn't talk a whole lot about the fight. She's fighting with Alex Chambers at UFC 191. Mm-hmm. They are kicking off the pay-per-view. She's a massive favorite in that fight. I know Alex Chambers is probably a name that not a lot of people know, but Paige Van Zandt is taking the slow ride. She's not trying to, you know, fight UNE and Jacek right now. She's not going for a title, and she doesn't need to. She's got plenty of time to build things up, but this is a big spot for her being on a pay-per-view, and did want an opportunity to talk to her and kind of, again, ask her a lot of things outside of the fight. What's going on with her career? You know, where does she see things going? And so that's kind of what I did. We didn't talk a lot about the fight itself, more just about her career, how it's been handled so far, and where she sees herself going forward. So we're going to grab ourselves one more round of cold beers here to wrap this thing up. And while we do that, let's listen to Paige Van Zandt, and then we'll come back and tell you what all we got going next week. Because next week is even busier than this week, if you can believe that.
That's
crazy. It rolls on, man. The end of this year is just going to be insane. So we'll get that all teed up. And while we do, you can listen to 12 Gauge Paige Van Zandt. We'll be right back. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, let's get started. I mean, I know you've had just one fight this year so far, but it's still been an incredible year for you. Your popularity is rising, the Reebok deal. What's this year been like for you?
Yeah, you know, this year's been amazing. I'm definitely at the best camp in the world. I have support from some of the best athletes in the UFC. So, the year's been exciting. A lot of changes for the better, and it's just been fun. Lots of blessings.
Sure. You know, it's funny. I look at a guy like a Conor McGregor, and he says, you know, one of the biggest superstars in the sport, and he says, I saw this all happening. This is all as I designed it and as I wanted it to be. I wonder, I mean, going into MMA when you started, did you ever see yourself on this type of meteoric rise, or has this exceeded even your own expectations?
Yeah, you know, I never could have anticipated this. I was a dancer and a cheerleader in high school, so the fact that I'm on this journey is definitely a surprise to me, as well as pretty much anyone I knew growing up. So, but I wouldn't have it any other way. This is definitely what I love. I'm so passionate about fighting, and the position I'm in is perfect right now for me. And I'm, yeah, you know, speak at all, or my technique is only getting better. So I'm excited to see how far I can take this.
Absolutely. I wonder, I mean, I can imagine with this fast rise, it would be easy to lose perspective and you know, keep yourself focused and maintain your commitment to the sport itself. I mean, is there anybody in your life that keeps you grounded and kind of keeps your head faced in the right direction?
Yeah, you know, all my teammates. It's kind of hard not to stay grounded when you have so many champions that are above you at your gym. I see Uriah Faber, I have Chad and TJ and Joseph and all these people that are, they're way above me. I have a long way to go before I'm on their level. So it is very easy to stay grounded.
It makes a lot of sense. What about the pressure of fighting? I mean, with the notoriety, which is, you know, puts you on a great platform and brings great opportunity to you, I would imagine that it's also, you know, the expectations increase around you as well. And you are just six fights into your career. You know, a similar fighter might have an opportunity to develop. You're not really getting that chance to develop. You're having to develop right in front of everybody. Is that difficult for you at all to accept and understand that, you know, this young in your career, you've got all this pressure on you already?
No, you know, I do really well under pressure, and I'm just kind of doing my thing, and I anticipated I would be in this sort of position at this age. I always wanted to be very successful, and that's what drives me, is being, I want to be the most successful person I can be, and I haven't peaked anywhere in my life yet, and I'm going to continue to have successes along this journey, so I'm just excited that it's happening at the right point in my life.
No doubt. Now, talk about your training itself with Team Alpha Male. You said it, a great group there. But when I see pictures, I always see you around all the guys. I just wonder, do you have any female training partners, or do you just feel like that rolling with them and working with them is you know, that gives you the looks you need?
Yeah, I do have girls that come in here and there. But for the most part, I am training with guys. But it's okay with me. I have people that come from all over the world coming to train with our team, so I get to train with people that are around my size from all over the world. And it's just great to just see how I match up against a bunch of other fighters around my size. And I have the best training partners that I could ask for.
Is, when you say those other girls, is it other professionals that come through, or is it just, you know, like aspiring professionals, or people that are established, or just people that are learning? What is it?
All guys, pretty much all guys come to our gym, and they're all people around the same weight class as, you know, what our camp is known for. We're known for small guys, so we have small guys coming in from all over the world, and I get to train with them as well. They're pretty much all professionals.
Does it ever concern you at all that you feel like you need female training partners, that, you know, women's bodies move a little bit different, they may have a little bit more flexibility, that sort of thing, or do you feel like training with guys, I mean, obviously the guys you're training with are super high level, but do you feel like you get the looks you need just working with male partners?
I definitely think I get the looks I need training with male partners. I don't think I would want any more girls in my gym. you know, I was a cheerleader, so I'm okay staying away from the girls and traumas.
Fair enough. I did see, too, you stayed busy, you know, when you're outside of the gym, too. I mean, you're busy doing Reebok photo shoots. And I wonder, you know, it's during the middle of your training camp. And certainly that's part of the commitment that comes with being with a top-level organization like Reebok. But I do wonder, have you started to put limitations or anything like that yet and say, hey, listen, you know, we're getting really close to my fight. I need to not do this. Or are you still pretty much an open book to do whatever is needed of you?
Yeah, of course I have limitations. Like, right now I'm not traveling until my weight cut starts, and I'm not going to go anywhere. Also, I only let people take me away on the weekends, and that's when I'm normally resting up anyways. It's really good to let your body recover, and I'm only gone on the weekends. And, you know, honestly, for me, it's good for me. I need to stay busy. I'm the type of person that when I'm not busy, when I'm not doing something, I can get depressed, or I just, like, sit down and mope. I have to stay busy, so... All the traveling has been really good for me, and just on the weekend, so I haven't nailed it. It hasn't hurt my training at all.
Very cool. Hey, speaking of recovery, I noticed, too, you brag a lot about the cryotherapy you do. And I've seen this as being kind of a growing trend in MMA. I know it's been around sports for a while, but I just wonder, I mean, tell me the truth. What does it feel like? Do you feel like you benefit from it? I mean, can you actually physically feel it, or do you just trust, you know, somebody says to you, no, this is really good for your body. It's great for your muscle recovery. You know, is it something that you're taking advice, or is it something that you really feel the difference when you do this cryotherapy?
For me, I honestly really, really feel the difference. Before my fight with Caitlin Curran, I had a pretty significant back injury, and everyone knew that. I had to go back and train in Reno so I could get physical therapy. And ever since the cryotherapy, my back pain has been going away. I've been able to train 100% and not experience a lot of the pain that I was having before. And it's awesome. I mean, honestly, it works really well for me, since instead of having to do an ice bath for up to 30 minutes, you go into a freezing cold room for 3 minutes.
Interesting. And your back, is it still bothering you at all, and this cryotherapy is helping, or do you feel like it's a totally thing of the past at this point?
No, I mean, I don't notice any significant pain or anything like that. Of course, I mean, you get sore here and there, but I feel great, and especially going into this fight camp, they've been a great help for me.
Very good. Well, let's talk about the fight itself. Alex Chambers, first of all, how does it come about? I wonder, you know, it's still early in your career, but, you know, is it the type of fight where Sean Shelby calls you and says, we've got three names, you know, which one works for you? Or are you still in the position where it's just like, here's the fight we've got for you, take it?
You know, it's kind of like they offered it to me, and I had the choice to accept it or deny it, and I said, yeah, I'll take that fight, of course. I'm going to take any fight the UFC offers me at this point. I'm not in a position to be able to tell the UFC no. And for me, this fight really does make sense. I think everyone saw that I finished Caitlin Curran in the third round, and Alex Chambers also finished Caitlin in the third round. So the fight makes sense, and I'm excited to just get back in there again.
How about the being on pay-per-view? I mean, is that anything special? I mean, certainly you've already, you know, fought on Fox, which is was a huge card, of course. But does being at a pay-per-view in Las Vegas, is that something special to you, or is it just another fight? You can't think about those things.
Yeah, of course, it's really special. That's amazing. I mean, I love that I've been given the opportunity to fight on pay-per-view. It's huge and very exciting, but. For me, the only real benefit I get to it is I know exactly what time I'm going to be fighting on, and I love that. Me and my coaches love to know exactly what time I'm going to be fighting at. And that's definitely something that a lot of people don't think about, and knowing exactly when you're going to be fighting, you warm up properly, you're ready to go at the right time.
Yeah, that can be a big advantage. What do you think a win does for you here? I mean, I know that your managers have said, hey, we're not in a rush to get you to the top. I know people are trying to rush you to the top because of your popularity, but are you kind of in the same agreement that, hey, you know, let's keep improving before we start talking about title shots and things like that, or are you already focused on getting the belt?
You know, obviously the belt is the main goal, but, you know, I'm young. I have many, many, many years to continue to fight, and me and my managers are on the exact same page. I'm going to take this journey as slow as I want to, and I love what I'm doing, so I'm going to continue to grow as an athlete, and slow and steady wins the race.
No doubt. I know you're a huge Ronda Rousey fan as well. She's doing big things outside of the cage too. Do you have those aspirations as far as like Hollywood roles and things like that, or are you really just focused on mixed martial arts right now?
Oh, no, I definitely, definitely want to go into that as well. That'd be huge. And to be able to open other doors with MMA would just be another great blessing. I would love to go into those sorts of things. And I already had those passions before I started MMA. So it would just be amazing to be able to continue that.
No doubt. Well, obviously, you've put on two great performances in the UFC so far. What do you think we're going to see out of you this time? Is there going to be anything different that the fans can tune into and notice? Do you think we're going to see anything, or is it just more of what you've already been establishing?
I've definitely changed as a fighter. I've definitely changed a few things here and there, and you're just going to have to tune in to find out.
Awesome, Paige. Well, thank you for the time today. I appreciate it. Any other last thoughts, messages, anything like that that we can get across for you?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I'm just excited to fight September 5th in Vegas.
Fantastic, Paige. Well, best of luck in the fight, obviously, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Paige Van Zandt, one of the fast rising stars in the UFC, but a lot of future ahead of her. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out. You know, is she destined for superstardom, or is she a flash in the pan? You know, certainly don't wish failure upon anybody, but, you know, you certainly can't put your eggs all in one basket too soon. And I think it's going to be interesting to follow her journey. As young as she is and as bright as she is right now, you know, can it continue on for her? And a big step of that is going to be UFC 191.
That's true. I mean, she constantly impresses me. I mean, even I thought in her fight against Herrig, I thought Herrig was too big, was going to be too strong. And watching what Paige did in that fight, I became a believer after that. You know, and I almost said believer, but that's like the wrong.
I was going to call you out on that. I thought you said believer for a second.
I was like, no, that's not what I'm trying
balls,
to say.
No,
but for some reason, no, maybe that word now was ruined because everybody fucking made a believer out of us. But that she so impressed me that, and every time she just seems to be getting better. So she keeps doing what she's doing, and I mean she's got the whole package. I mean she's cute, she talks well. I mean she's like open and funny, and she's engaging in her interviews. And if the fighting game keeps getting better and better as it has been doing, man, I mean she could be a fucking superstar. I mean much more so. Like, this guy's a superstar.
This guy's a superstar. The man who shall remain unnamed that just brought over another round of Frosty Adult Beverages.
We'll just call him Vice President. He's not a Vice President, but we'll just call him the Vice.
He is a prominent official of some place. He is a nice guy. We appreciate that. Well, listen, we said it was a busy week. We've got an even busier week coming up. Before we go over that, I do want to say one thing. One thing that might have slipped through the cracks a little bit with all the news that comes up on MMA Junkie was a really fantastic video that you put together of Frank Mir.
That was a lot of fun. And his kids.
It was very cool. We still got some more Frank Mir content, obviously, with UFC 191 coming up. But what started is just kind of a – we weren't sure if we should be filming it. I mean, first of all, it's a guy's, you know, teenage kids and even younger, and he's training them, and we were kind of worried, like, ugh, should we be filming this? And he was like, no, it's okay. You guys can shoot this. And so you rolled tape for a little. It was basically the end of our shoot anyway, but you rolled tape for a little while, and it ended up being a really good feature. And it worked out great because then he ended up doing an interview with MMA Junkie Radio where he talked about it, talked about his kids and about the passion that they have for fighting and about you know, how his daughter is really trying to follow in the footsteps of Ronda Rousey. And if people are listening to this and haven't had a chance to see that, definitely go see it. Search for the latest Frank Mir video, basically, where Frank Mir talks about Ronda Rousey making his life harder. It's a good article because it summarizes the MMA Junkie Radio interview. But I thought the video turned out great, where he's really coaching both of his kids, a son and a daughter. And his daughter, I don't mind saying, Bella, man, she's just turning into a teenager. She looks legit already. Her form.
Yeah, her form.
And just the determination that you can see in her eyes, the focus that she has. You can tell she wants to turn pro, and I think if she keeps at it, man, I think she has the potential to be somebody.
I agree. And you know, editing, and when you see a final package, you never really get the full gist. I mean, it was fun. You know, I think it's always nice, and it's sort of rewarding for us when a fighter sort of lets you be involved in what normally is like a closed door sort of thing,
right?
You know, and I mean, that's probably one of the most rewarding and, you know, fulfilling things that we get, that we're lucky enough to get to do, that, you know, you can't quantify or put a dollar value on that closeness that you sort of feel when you're able to be take part of that. So, but what was neat about that, you know, that some of the stuff that gets chopped on the cutting floor is, like, you know, Frank really was instructing. And you don't hear a lot of it. I mean, you'll hear some of it in the video. But, like, when the form was off, he's like, oh, that was great, baby. But here, try this. Or, oh, you know, you're still sort of like this. But I didn't want people to think that he was too hard on the kids or doing whatever. But, I mean, the guy's a fucking champion. He's a former champion and, you know, quite possibly, again, could be a champion again. And, you know, a champion's not going to sugarcoat it, whether it's his kids or not, you know. But I love the fact that we're seeing, like, real instruction. It wasn't just, oh, baby, you know, blah, 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 blah. Let's do this for the camera. It was more like, hey, yeah, I'm gonna be working my kids through some stuff. But, you know, and it's fun because, you know, his wife's even like, oh, I'm sure the kids will get a kick out of it. They'd love to see you guys filming or whatever. So it was like, oh, yeah, go over. And any time that we are lucky enough to do that, you know, of course we'll eat it up. You know, and it was great to see. But, no, it was a fun video to put together. And, you know, I'm glad that people have, you know, been watching it and enjoying it, because it certainly was fun to kind of be there when it happened.
It was very cool. It's performed very well, we should say, as people who are website operators. It's done a good job in terms of views and that sort of thing. But that's not really why I'm asking you to watch it if you haven't. It's not about trying to get a cash in on a video view or whatever. The bottom line is, when we're doing this thing, you know, the MMA Roadshow here, I just like to tell you guys the things that we like and the things that we're thinking about. And if you didn't see it, I definitely think you should. So, mentioned, it was a big week this week. We got a big week coming up. Of course, we're here for the rest of the weekend, Temecula, California, for Bellator 141. Excited to see that. Some guest fighters are in town that we'll see tomorrow, so we'll be racking up some video there. Excited to bring some more interviews and news next week. And then it just gets crazy from there. Monday, you fly out to Los Angeles. Demetrius Johnson, Paige VanZant are having a media luncheon in Los Angeles. You're going to be out there for that.
Oh, so I'll get to actually sit down and have lunch with her.
You will get to sit down and have lunch with Paige VanZant. Wednesday, I will actually be flying to Los Angeles for a lunch with Conor McGregor.
Boring.
I know.
That's totally not Paige.
What could possibly be said there?
I know. Yeah, right.
You, meanwhile, will be heading to an undisclosed location in Las Vegas. Joanna Jędrzejczyk will be there. Forrest Griffin will be there. And the Detroit Pistons will be there. They are coming into Las Vegas for a week to do some mixed martial arts-related training. You're going to be there to see what they've done. Apparently, some UFC fighters have done some basketball-related training with them in the past, and now this is kind of a trade-out. And we're going to get to do some interviews there and see what exactly is going on there. So that should be a lot of fun.
That should be fun.
And then, of course, right after that, it's UFC 191. The pre-fight activities start on Thursday. Weigh-ins on Friday. Of course, the fight's on Saturday. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff next week. So
it is a busy week.
It's a busy week, my man.
Right. Even like this week. This week kind of crept up, you know. I mean, things slipped through the cracks. So, you know, yeah. But we'll be on it. We'll get it, and we'll still deliver a road show somewhere in there.
You're damn straight, man. That's what it's all about. It just gives us more opportunity to bring you fun, unique content. So, listen, again, as we said before, if you're listening, we really do appreciate it. The MMA Roadshow. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the MMA Roadshow.
And Periscope.
Yeah, we're adding in some Periscope.
We're trying to add in some Periscope.
We don't know what we're doing with that yet, but we're trying. It's kind of a fun thing to do. Again, you can download us on the website, themmaroadshow.com. You can also get us on iTunes. If you are, please subscribe to us. Please rate us. Please review us. You know, help us to build the profile and kind of continue to bring this thing to you. As I can tell you, the rest of this year is just going to get crazy. We've had a couple of weeks home here in Las Vegas, and we're enjoying it. I know you're enjoying some time kicking it around your pool in the backyard. I'm enjoying time hanging out with my wife and son. But we're about to get back on the road hardcore, and if things go the way that they should go, we are going to be bringing you some in-person MMA road shows from some very exotic locales for the rest of the year. So
hopefully so.
Hopefully it works out. In the meantime, we've got some frosty beverages. They're starting to get double parked here. And, of course, that is a sin of the highest nature, and we will be taking care of that. So, listen, hope you guys enjoyed everything that you heard tonight. Obviously, hit us up. Give us feedback. Tell us what you want to hear, what you want to hear us do better, what you want to hear us change. I'm down for all of that. If you know, never mind. I don't want to say anything. Anyway, more than anything, thanks for listening.
Can we get her on the show?
I didn't want to say anything.
I'll say it.
We're not rolling, right?
Later. All right. We're rolling.
We're rolling? We rolling. Yeah. That was terrible.
Bert would be somewhat impressed.
I got a better one, but it's been a long day.
Is that noise? Oh, it's the game with the thingy. I was like, what the fuck is that noise?
We're good? We're rolling?
Yeah.
We rolling.
That was better.
I'm doing it very low. I mean, it's not like
I feel like I should. Oh, it's too late. I called Bert. Like, Bert, we need some real.
I mean, I could like scream it out.
Need a real example.
No, I'll probably get carted out of here.
At least I don't feel like we're getting the looks we normally do. I think people are just they're accepting in California. They just like, oh, it's just those two dudes. I bet they're podcasting over there.
But I bet they're doing a podcast, honey.
I hope it's an eco-friendly podcast.
We rolling.